This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, good morning. Hope you had a great weekend, all that good stuff. How are we doing?
I'm doing well, Pack. Show 356 today. We got a big guest list. Brendan Marks will be here from The Athletic in the first hour. Hour two today, Kevin Corrigan, the Corrigan?
Yeah, that's the same.
Wait,
same
another
family.
Corrigan?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Ubiquitous.
Another Corrigan. Kevin Corrigan will join us, the head coach at Notre Dame lacrosse. We look forward to him being here at 8:30. Danny Busboom Kelly, the Louisville volleyball head coach, fresh off the ACC championship, will join us at 8:45. 9 o'clock, Jenny Levy will be here at 9:15, specifically Carolina's women's lacrosse coach after a big win over Syracuse over the weekend, and one of the great Carolina basketball players of all time, Phil Ford, at 9:30 this morning. So we got a full guest list. And mark the national championship game tonight in basketball. So, but it doesn't have an ACC team in it.
Yeah, how about that? Virginia, this is it, Wahoos. This is your last day to party like a rock star because you got to turn in your crown tonight. You still get to keep that banner from 2019, but two-year run, you get a chance to have it. But tonight we will crown a new champion. And Wes, I will say, has nothing to do with the ACC. However, that Gonzaga-UCLA thing late night Saturday was something else. That was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen. It was awesome.
And I agree.
And UCLA played lights out, 15-point underdog. You know, an incredible run as an 11 seed. It already won five games, which ironically was more than our league produced in this NCAA tournament, which is crazy to think that way. But that game and Suggs' shot, I mean, that was legendary stuff. It's what makes March Madness so spectacular. So tonight you have Gonzaga and Baylor, but as you pointed out, no ACC team to be found. And that is very unusual. And again, I think a tip of the hat too to Stanford. Their ladies took care of business, winning the national championship, surviving, I guess, might be a better way to do it. Beat South Carolina by one. Won last night by one against Arizona in a Pac-12 Invitational. So Stanford won their 44th. It's the 44th consecutive year a team won a national championship from Stanford, right? Is that is a ridiculous.
Wow.
That's one of those,
yeah.
Huh? What did he just say? For the last 44 years, at least one team from Stanford has won a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Let that marinate a second. That I don't care who you are, where you are, who you root for, that is strong. That's a big number. Come get it if you can get it. But nevertheless, we here in ACC land will put our feet up and like the Big Ten, and we'll sit there and watch the SEC and watch what the Zags and Baylor do tonight. It's really the game, quite frankly, we've all talked about from a national perspective we wanted to see. I mean, these really have been the two best teams based on which way you want to lean, and we're going to get that in the national championship game.
Pack, I remember in early December, we came back from the weekend the game was canceled. I think it was December 5th that game was originally scheduled, right? And we came back, and I remember the next week following the football championship game and all the other things, talking about how disappointed we were that we didn't get that game in the regular season.
Right.
And I think I recall at some point along the way you said, hopefully we may get it for the national championship. Well, here we are.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll tell you,
good for us, by the way.
And I'll tell you what's even funnier. I talked to Mark Few a couple times this year, and I remember back in January, he said, Pack, we got a chance to maybe reschedule this thing in February. And I said, you know, I'd love to see it. However, I'd kind of like to see it for a national championship if that's what we end up getting. And lo and behold, we do. Look at this number right here. This kind of puts things in perspective, kind of an extended reach to the ACC with North Carolina and Kansas back in 57 when the Heels knocked off Wilt.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of L's on this board, boys and girls. This will be a good one tonight. Should be.
Yeah. Well, it sets the stage, and you're right about one thing, Saturday. And Rob Doster, who you and I have talked about throughout the basketball season, does a really marvelous job covering the game. Has a blog he writes every day called The Rebound, and he said yesterday in his blog that college basketball needed Gonzaga-UCLA badly yesterday, and they need Gonzaga-Baylor tonight badly. And I think he's right, Mark, in that this creates a bit of momentum for the sport in a sport that right now needs some needs some feel good, doesn't it? I mean, and you got a shot Saturday night that's one of the three best shots we've seen in the NCAA tournament since Leitner in 92 at the Spectrum in Philadelphia to beat Kentucky, and throw Chris Jenkins in there to win the national championship against Carolina and Houston. But that game Saturday night, that's the kind of game gets people watching college basketball. That's the kind of game that'll draw you back in, not only tonight but potentially down the road here a little bit, given the volatility of the sport that we've been talking about here for the last week or so.
Well, in a sport that's dominated by blue bloods, right? North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Indiana, Kansas, UCLA. We got a team from Spokane, Washington, and Waco, Texas, playing for a national championship.
Yeah.
You know, a Final Four for the first time ever, which had four teams west of the Mississippi. Kind of curious to see what the TV numbers are. Not that it really matters. The game's either good or they're either bad. The game Saturday night, the second one, was one of the best games I've ever seen. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's in the top five for sure. I mean, it was that kind of game. 19 lead changes, overtime. UCLA's down five. Looks like they're dead in the water with, 25, 30 seconds to go. They find a way to tie it, and then Suggs makes this ridiculous shot, and it looked like he knew it was in the second it left his hand and just walked it right in, man. It was just a great basketball game. But you're right, Wes, as far as the big picture, college basketball needs all the help it can get. I mean, given the fact that we're up to almost 1,300 in the transfer portal, we got the situation like North Carolina now looking for a coach who replaces a legend like Roy Williams. That's going to be an ongoing question on this show and around every show in the world of sports that covers college athletics until North Carolina's going to make an announcement. I mean, the sport could use it, right? I mean, the sport really tonight could use another classic, and it's got the chance. I don't want to hype it too much because it really is the two best teams. No disrespect to Illinois, who I know from the final AP poll was actually number two, and Baylor was number three. But the sport could use a great send-off into the summer of unknown with name, image, and likeness in the transfer portal, coaching changes, and everything else. So, yeah, I would tend to agree that, hey, if you'd rather have a game that sits there that gives you, I can't believe the season's over, right? You want one of those moments where when that thing goes, hey, last shining moment on the moment, whatever that song is, the CBS plays, that you just go, oh, I can't believe the season's over. You need that tonight. You really do. You don't want to have one of these final score 81-60 and somebody's cutting down the nets. You're like, yeah, I turn that thing off at halftime. Catch you later. You know, we're going to tip this thing off at 9 o'clock for crying out loud, which makes just zero sense to me. Never has made any sense to me. But nevertheless, they don't pay me to make that decision. So be it. But I hope we have a great day.
I do too. By the way, Gonzaga is obviously playing tonight to go to the uncharted water for the first time since 1976.
Yep.
When Indiana went undefeated. So there's that storyline. There's the reclamation project that Scott Drew has done at Baylor to get the Bears back to a national championship game for the first time, I think, since the 40s, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
You know, and things of that nature. So you've got that. And there's no ACC team in the championship game for the first time in 13 years back.
Yeah, the smart guys up there in Bristol, men and women that run the show, the smart people up there in Bristol, gave us that little tidbit before, and they're including Louisville, who at the time was a Big East member, now an ACC member.
Right.
And that includes men and women, right? Men and women.
Right.
So it has been a while, and like I said the other day, man, you know, when we got kicked to the curb in the league, I said, we are all spoiled rotten, and we are. We're all spoiled rotten as college basketball fans in this league, because you just assume, well, when you roll the ball out, guess what? Somebody from the ACC is going to have it, right? It just, you have that mindset before a season starts, during a season, and certainly during March and early April, that the ACC is going to have something to do with it. And this go around, we don't. So, you know what? It's unusual, but you sit on the couch. And again, I hope we're entertained tonight. It has the potential being a great game. It really does.
Yeah. Well, if the date means anything, we might very well be headed to a good ball game, because we've had two national championships involving ACC teams on this date. Let's roll it back to April 5th, 1993. the Louisiana Superdome, kids. North Carolina beat Michigan. Cue Woody Durham. He doesn't have any timeouts. Where's Tate and Titus? Chris Webber calls the timeout. Jalen Rose, what are you saying to him?
He's saying what 50 million people were saying. Hey, dude, you don't have a timeout. What are you doing? You also don't have any trophies, which is what the Fab Five was able to accomplish. You know, people don't ever talk about that. They keep talking about the Fab Five like they, oh, my God, Fab Five transitioned to basketball. Yeah, maybe wearing shorts. They never won anything, Wes. Go look that up. And I always, and listen, and Jalen Rose, nice guy, C-Web, all those dudes. I mean, I get it. But they never won anything. People always talk about, well, that Michigan era. What Michigan era? When you went on probation or when you didn't win anything? Or both? I always get confused with that. Go look up the Fab Five and we should put on a graphic. Here's what the Fab Five won at Michigan. And I'm not going to count probation. They didn't win anything. They might have been the most hyped group of dudes I've ever seen that never won anything. They get mad at me all you want. You go look it up and you go, you know what? That moron on television, he was right. They haven't won anything. But they were great. Now, listen, they were awesome to watch. I loved watching. I loved the swagger. I loved all that. The scowls, the long pants. They had all that cool stuff. Dude, you had no hardware.
Mm-hmm.
You had no hardware. None. Zero.
Trendsetters,
the amount of timeouts you had. Yeah, they were trendsetters for all the wrong reasons. You didn't win anything. I'd rather have the hardware.
Right.
I'd rather have the hardware than the baggy shorts. Just saying. Just that's me.
Okay.
I didn't win anything.
I got you.
Just saying.
I know. I got you. I'm with you on that. Now, also on this day, 11 years ago, we're speaking of great shots. This was an almost great shot.
Yep.
And that is Duke beating Butler. In Indianapolis, by the way, and Gordon Hayward dang near hit it from the half court line.
Dude,
Nolan Smith and John Shire would have had the best seat in the house, by the way. It rimmed out, and Duke won the national championship, 2010.
Let me ask you a question.
There you go. That was a whale of a ball game, too, by the way.
That was a great game. But let me ask you a question.
Yep.
And you're going to call me crazy on this one, too. I swear to you, every time I see a replay of that shot, I still don't know if it's going to go. No. I still think it might go in. I know it doesn't. But I swear to you, every time I see it, I'm like, you know, it might go in this time. I mean, it was that. I mean, I'm talking about that close. What a game that
was. Let me ask you this. It was a great game. In relationship to Saturday night, Gordon Hayward and Jalen Suggs, okay? Did you have to wait a second, that went in. When Suggs threw that shot up the other night and it banked in, did you just kind of
Let me tell you.
Go, wait, that went in.
Well, let me tell you what's funny. We had a bunch of guests over for the Easter weekend. We had TVs on the fourth floor, the third floor, and the second floor, all right, in the house. You know how our house is constructed.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the third floor. And when it went in, I could hear people on the fourth floor and the second floor going, oh, my God, it went in. I mean, I'm sure it was like that if you were watching the game at the bar, if you were watching the comfort of your home. You could not believe it went in, right? It was just one of those, oh, my God. Goodness, you've got to be kidding me moments. And it was such a great game.
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, back and forth. And again, UCLA, I know they're bummed out today, but man, what an effort by UCLA. I mean, that was just a great, great basketball game.
By the way, in passing here, tip of the cap to Martin Jarman, who used to be the AD at Boston College, now is taking over at UCLA.
Yep.
Nice first year, Martin. Congratulations. Holy smokes.
How do you think Larry Scott feels, right? I mean, he's on his way out as the commissioner of the Pac-12. They've basically been irrelevant in football and basketball for a while. You know, he watches Stanford cut down the nets. He watches UCLA go in an incredible run. Yeah. And by the way, Stanford beat Arizona. So, I mean, it's come to the Pac-12 Invitational on the ladies' side. The men go, what, 13-5, I think is what the Pac-12's final record was in the tournament. Sensational run for a league that was really kind of completely ignored before the tournament started. So Larry Scott's going to be sitting there going, well, I guess it's a nice parting gift on the way out the door as they try to figure out what they're going to do for their commissionership. But really, it was just, again, I can't emphasize. I don't think it was the best game I've ever seen in college basketball, but it's a top fiver. It really was. It was that good.
It's up there. Mm-hmm. Yep. Brendan Marks still to come. Kevin Corrigan. Danny Busboom Kelly, Louisville volleyball coach off the ACC championship there. UNC women's lacrosse coach Jenny Levy and Phil Ford, all part of this program. But when we come back, boys and girls, on this Monday, we got something for you.
Football.
Clemson had their orange and white game on Saturday. And I've already got the spring wide receiver U winner. Already. Yep, that's right. Two spring games in, and I'm calling game with Andrew Booth next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. We're going to cover all kinds of sports today. And Mr. Durham, you were front and center Saturday in Death Valley where the Clemson Tigers showcased what a little spring football looks like. I know they had a bunch of starters wearing baseball hats, but still, everybody was kind of excited to see some of these young guys out there doing their thing, and you got a little bit of everything on that thing Saturday, didn't you?
Yeah, and let's be honest, after two starts last year, I think a lot of people were probably anxious to see what DJ Uiagalelei would offer for Clemson in combination with some of the resetting in the offensive line and things like that. And Uiagalelei was really good. 20 of 28, 174. There's the touchdown to Bo Collins, his high school teammate on the opening drive. He fired it in here now, Pack. Here's the TD. Oh, that's the catch by Ngata. You'll see the a Joe touchdown from Hunter Helms later. But to me, you're looking at a guy who looked really confident. Now, remember, the QB run stuff was limited because of the way they officiate and the rules they've got for quarterback play. But I thought it was impressive. 174 and a score. I like the Joe, who we saw last year briefly, 6 catches, 100 yards, touchdown. I thought they ran it with a combination of guys. Mm. That probably caught your eye a little bit. We saw Michael Dukes early, Chaz Malusi. We saw Kobe Phil Maffa. Pace. We saw Will Shipley.
Kobe Pace.
I mean, you got your eyes full, didn't you?
I tried. I whispered to you all week. I said, the boys down there keep telling me these freshman running backs they got are going to be filthy good. I think that's going to be the case. To me, Clemson's going to be, number one, health is going to be issue one. You know, you lose your backup quarterback late in the game with the Achilles out for the year, mm-hmm. which is, you know, they're going to have to address that. I mean, you got to have that number two guy ready to roll just in case. And the offensive line improvement. I mean, that was the one area I thought last year for Clemson standards, they were kind of sub 500 in the offensive line department. They, you know, mm-hmm. they're going to have to get a little tougher, a little nastier. And again, it's spring football, so you can't go too crazy in terms of putting somebody on a pedestal or ripping it sideways. You got to keep it in perspective. But if the offensive line develops and gets back to that nasty edge, I think they're going to be just fine. You throw in Justin Ross, you didn't see. Hopefully he'll be back doing his thing. He's a problem for everybody mm-hmm. in the country. We'll have to deal with him. The Collins combination is going to be really good. Latson, Ngata, E.J. Williams. Dude, they got so many weapons. It's stupid. And that
tight ends too, Pack.
Don't forget. The tight ends.
Galloway didn't play. Jalen Lay looked tremendous.
Really good.
Browning Stool, they're excited about. I mean,
they got dudes. They got, as Charles Barkley says, they have Jimmies and Joes, don't they? They have Joes and Jimmies there. And what was he talking about? But
All right.
Clemson's going to be just fine. And I just think that defensive line last year, which was really talented but young, you heard some other names pop up that you went, who is that guy? You're going to have to deal with him. So, listen, Clemson's going to be really, really good. No surprise there. And I thought Dabo was fun on the broadcast with you guys, with Eric McLean and Roddy and the boys. And, Joe. And I remember Dabo last year going, man, wait till you see this guy we got from Canada. Right? And with all the names at Clemson football, he was bragging about this guy. Joe Adjou, wait till you see this guy. Well, you know what? You're in the weight room, and he was catching everything in sight Saturday. And you're like,
well, let me tell you who that guy is this year. Let me tell you who that guy is this year. Rook Aurora. who that guy is this year.
Yikes. Who is that guy? That's a monster. He's a monster.
All right. But, we have already had the winner of the spring wide receiver U. We're two games in, and we've had a winner.
You're already calling it?
Just saying. Calling it.
Man, you got the Wolfpack this weekend.
Let's get to the video.
Wait a minute. You got the Wolfpack this weekend.
Humachon and Andrew Booth. Yep, that's right.
We've seen
same
his
guy,
Booth.
Same
we've
defense.
Yeah.
Seriously? And he's in bounds, and he got called out of bounds, and we didn't go to replay.
Yeah, referees missed that call.
Because probably we didn't have it, and they got the right foot down, and Andrew said he was just being regular.
Yeah. Referees that's being a regular, pick. Too. They missed the call. Totally whiffed on the call. But nevertheless, it's April. You're giving out wide receiver new awards. I'm already ripping the refs. Yeah, you got great guys. You missed it.
Two games in.
You know, Booth did that
Roddy
to Virginia.
Roddy Jones will be here at some point.
Right. I mean, Booth did that
Roddy
to Virginia
Roddy Jones will
last
be here
year.
At some point in about 3 weeks to give us a full report card of the ACC spring, by the way.
Yeah. I was going to say.
He's tabulating as we go.
I was going to say, for the fourth time, Booth tried to do that against Virginia and did last year. And looked like the same play almost. Went in the end zone. But he was in on both plays.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is stupid.
Here it is. Look again. Tell me it's not over. It's over. Who's beating that? Seriously. Who's beating this?
How'd the refs miss that call? Seriously.
Of all the things we do, Mark. I mean.
Look, there's refs standing right there, right in front of them. How'd you miss that call?
Is that not a winner? Is that not a winner?
That'd be hard to beat. I'm with you on that. Tigers are going to be pretty good, Wes. I think it's safe to say on April the 5th, Dabo's guys they'll be in the hunt again.
Clemson.
Tigers will be pretty good.
Clemson. Tigers. We're gonna project Clemson to be acceptable. How's that?
Yeah, unlike the Fab Five, these guys actually win things. They win conference championships and national championships, unlike
day.
The Fab Five.
Hammer all day.
Well, I mean, today's the anniversary. How many years was it ago? 28, 29? Since Fab Five?
28.
Give me a time. 28. You're great.
28, Pack.
Great. Awesome. You lose again.
Pat Sullivan to the free throw line late to clinch it for Carolina.
Cool shorts, though.
Pat Sullivan.
Hey, if you're into black socks and baggy shorts, they were cool. They were cool. Didn't win anything, though.
Oh, boy. Get off my lawn.
Look it up. How many Big Ten titles those dudes win? Wes, forget about Natties. How many Big Ten titles those guys win?
Get off his lawn.
Hey, all I hear is about, man, the Fab Five. The Fab Five didn't win a thing. Didn't win anything.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to people that did win things.
Yes.
Roy Williams retired at Carolina on Thursday. News broke at 10:05.
Yeah.
And Brendan Marks has been covering it for The Athletic, and he's agreed after extensive negotiation to get up early and talk to Packer and Durham next.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
When I realized that I was going to walk through that tunnel for the last time as a coach, that was really difficult.
I was with Coach Smith for 10 years. He was a mentor, a great, great, great teacher, a guy who I thought was the best there ever was on the court, and he was far superior to that off the court.
You know, assistant coaches in basketball or football never seem to get the attention I think they deserve, and Coach Roy Williams. He's a superb teacher and a very bright individual whom we think just does a fabulous job. Coach Williams has been with us a number of years, and he's turned down major head college jobs, and I think he'll probably be taking one, maybe next year, maybe the next year.
It's been a thrill. It has been unbelievable. I've loved it. It's coaching, and that's all I've ever wanted to do since the summer after my ninth grade year in high school.
When I came back, Coach Smith at that time said, we need you, and I didn't want to let him down. A lot of things I do in coaching, I try to figure out would this make Coach Smith proud, and that's pretty important to me.
Three times a charm for Roy Williams. They're singing nothing could be finer than the title for Carolina.
No doubt in Detroit to number one, North Carolina, the national champions. And redemption is found in the desert. The Tar Heels have won their sixth national title.
You've made me a better man, and that's the most important thing. I'm 10 times better man than when I was I got here, so thank you.
And Roy Williams picks up his 879th career victory, tying him with his mentor, the legendary Dean Smith.
You know, it's a number. That's what it is. Scott Smith came out and said one thing, and I think he was right. He said Dad would be really happy. And I think he would be.
Thank you.
Carolina basketball family is the strongest there's ever been, there ever will be.
I love coaching, working with the kids on the court, the locker room, the trips, the jump around music, the trying to build a team. I will always love that, but I no longer feel that I'm the right man. No one has ever enjoyed coaching like I have for 48 years. And for the rest of my life, I'll always say that I was a coach, and that's the proudest moment of my life.
Roy Williams, legend, no doubt about it. Coming to a golf course near you, that'd be Roy Williams, keeping in the short grass. You better put out that three-footer, too. Roy ain't going to give you no three-footer. Not now. Not in retirement, he's not. You got to put that thing
not
out.
In the hell.
We look forward to having him on at some point in time when he chills and grills and enjoys the life of the grandkids and again, playing golf. And the next chapter, he'll love it. But we'll miss him, though. No doubt about it. He was a great, great basketball coach and a terrific person.
Yep. Brendan Marks has covered a lot of Roy Williams for The Athletic. Prior to that, as a student at Carolina with a DTH and everything else, and he has been riding the emotional roller coaster of Carolina basketball since Thursday at 10:05. So, Brendan, let's go from, Friday at noon to now, where Bubba Cunningham and the Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz have had to try and think about who's next. And it's interesting because some names have been hatched out there, and a lot of people dismiss Jay Wright. I never thought Jay Wright was going to be a candidate anyway. So where is this search, and how fast a track you think we're on?
Yeah, you know, I think in terms of the speed, this was always going to be a process that had to play itself out quickly, right? And Bubba Cunningham sort of acknowledged that last Thursday night when he spoke to reporters, and he said, you know, I want to get this done as quickly as I can. And you can sort of look to his previous history when he replaced Larry Fedora with Mac Brown in the football program. It took 2 days. And obviously the circumstances and the behind the scenes are very different, but that's the level of speed that we're working with here. I would be very, very surprised, if not shocked, if we didn't have the new head coach in place by the end of this week, if not sooner than that. I mean, I think you could see this announcement come, you know, maybe as soon as tomorrow, as soon as Wednesday. That's how quickly Bubba Cunningham wants to move. As far as where they are in the search, it is my understanding that the interview process is still ongoing. So I know that a couple of names have come out already. I can confirm Jerry Stackhouse has already interviewed for the job. Hubert Davis has already interviewed for the job. And I think that those two guys are high on the list of potential candidates. And, you know, the underlying, I think, storyline behind this hire, whoever Bubba Cunningham and the Chancellor and the UNC Board of Trustees ultimately decide, it was going to be a question of, are we going to keep this in the family or are we not? And I think that the interviews that you have seen so far, some of the names that have been yielded, it seems to be Bubba Cunningham's plan. They would prefer, if not to have a head coach in the family, to at least have a bench full of players who are in the family and have that experience with North Carolina.
Brendan, on Friday's show, we had an interview with Larry Brown, legendary figure in North Carolina history. And he made the comment he thought that Roy Williams should have some say-so in picking his successor. Your thoughts on that front?
Yeah, I think that that absolutely is not just appropriate, but I think it's almost necessary in a situation like this. I think, you know, when you go back and you look at Dean Smith and when he eventually retired and a similar stunning fashion, I would say, obviously, again, a little bit different, but he obviously had say into what happened next in the process. And I think that Roy Williams would be the same way. Bubba Cunningham told reporters that he absolutely would, quote. And I think that when you're talking about how much does Roy Williams's input factor into this decision, you also have to factor in the reality of some of these candidates. You know, Roy Williams is great friends with Mark Few, who's going to be coaching tonight the national championship for an undefeated season. They're longtime gambling buddies. Is it possible that Roy Williams reaches out to a former friend of his and says, hey, you know, I need you here? Absolutely. But again, at the same time, that's very different than if Roy Williams says, you know, something about Wes Miller, who's obviously in a very different situation than someone like a Mark Few. So, yes, will Roy Williams have a say in the matter? 100%. Does that mean that his, you know, quote unquote pick will eventually be the person? There's a lot more that goes into it than just that.
All right, Brendan, two things here. One, I keep coming back to Bubba, and I told Pac this on Friday. Thursday night, Bubba Cunningham used fit, time, and circumstance as the landscape for the hire, which didn't necessarily narrow the door, but it also gave you something I want to follow up with you about, in that Bubba Cunningham seemingly is – he knows how big a job this is. He knows how good a job it is. And to your point about 2 days for Mack Brown – I think you're dead on Wednesday. I think he can have it done by Wednesday. And at the same time, have the complexities, if it's not a Carolina family member as the head coach, understanding the value of that infrastructure with the new head coach.
Yeah. One thing that I would also add, and I think that this piece of it does complicate the decision and the timing of not just the hire, but the timing of the announcement of the hire. Is also, what do you do with the bench? What do you do with the staff that Roy Williams had in place? What do you do with some of these other candidates who you're speaking to, you eventually don't go with? Are you trying to bring any of them in a replacement void? So I think that that piece of the picture is really fascinating to me, because do you just announce it as, hey, this person is going to be our new head coach and they will have their decisions about the bench later on? Or in the event that this is a hire that is outside of the family, do you need to be able to say at the time of announcement, I'm also going to have X, Y, and Z on the bench as my assistants to give me ties to Carolina, to give me people who understand the program, yada, 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 et cetera. So, but certainly, no. I mean, this is a decision that has to move fast for a number of reasons. And I think a big one that people may not realize is every day that passes that UNC does not have a head coach, as crazy as this sounds, is another day that UNC is disadvantaged in building back its roster. This is a team that has seen several defections since the end of the season. There are over 1,200 names already in the transfer portal. There's going to be another 50 or 100 by the end of the day. There's probably going to be another dozen by the time we get off the line with each other. So whoever the next person is has to get in there and start re-recruiting the current players on the roster, and has to go into the portal and start recruiting some players to come and fill out the rest of the depth chart. So, again, it's a decision that has a lot of factors swirling around it. And I think that the bench and also, you know, the immediacy of needing to fix the roster are two of the big problems that will expedite Bubba Cunningham's decision.
Brendan, you are reading my mind on the next question where I was going to hit you. And that is, for me, in the family, outside the family, hey, you guys pick whatever makes everybody happy. But what's even more important is whoever it is better have a handle on the lay of the land, because it is shifting. It is not old-fashioned, hey, we're North Carolina, we're Duke, we're Kentucky, we're Indiana, we're Kansas, we're going to go grab every McDonald's All-American and that's our roster. It's a different universe now. So whoever the person is, young, old, white, black, in the family, out of the family, whatever the combination is, great, but that person better have a real handle on the adjustment of what is college basketball in this day and time, because it is getting ready to be unlike anything we have ever seen before.
It 100% is. And I think Roy Williams probably put this as well as anyone recently. And he said, this offseason, the passage or the expected passage of the NCAA's one-time transfer rule will be the single most important piece of legislation in college basketball history. And I think it has the potential to be. That's how serious a change in the landscape is going to be. And you're entirely right in talking about whoever the next person is. They have to not only understand that, but they have to have a plan moving forward for how they're going to continue to sort of be at the forefront of whatever the new waves of college basketball are. So, I've had a couple of friends reach out to me. Hey, you know, I heard Roy Williams' press conference. I heard everything that he said. I heard, you know, as hard as it was, I heard him say that he doesn't think he's still the right man for the job. And I think when you're talking about the process of looking at 1,200 guys changing homes, Roy Williams never had transfers traditionally. He is still an old-fashioned guy who preferred to fly 3 hours, drive a fourth just for 15 minutes of FaceTime with someone rather than getting on a single FaceTime call for 5 or 10 minutes. This is going to be – this hire has a chance, if Bubba Cunningham does it correctly, to position UNC to continue to be at the forefront of college basketball. But again, like you mentioned, it has to be someone who is adept and comfortable with all of these massive shifts that are coming down the pipeline, because college basketball is going to look fundamentally different as early as next season than it has in the past couple.
All right, let's Pack, can we do this? Can we go cannonball into the pool of speculation here for a couple minutes with Brendan? Don't you think that's appropriate?
You're first.
All right. Brendan, let's prospect here a little bit. Mark Few coaches tonight. 1 to 10, how significant a candidate do you think he is for the job?
I would say a 2. And the only reason I put it above a 1 is because he is such a close personal friend of Roy Williams's. They have a long friendship going back a number of years. They're big time gambling buddies. They love to play craps together. I think that is the only thing that really presents Mark Few as a serious candidate, though, because you're talking about a guy, is he really going to potentially coach an undefeated national champion tonight and then turn around and in 2 days he's being introduced in Chapel Hill, right? I just don't see that happening personally.
All right. Brad Stevens' name always seems to circulate this time of year for valuable college jobs. He's already, gone on the merry-go-round at Bloomington. Is Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics, who's rumored to be in trouble with that job from day to day, is he a viable candidate here?
I would say that he is a more viable candidate than Mark Few is, pretty comfortably so. And for some of the reasons you just mentioned, where he is right now in Boston, I don't think is the same place that he has been the past few seasons. I think that when you're looking at the makeup of that job and the immediate pathway that he has to success there, it's not a tremendous runway. He's looking at a team that has a contract for an aging point guard whose knees are only going to continue to get worse. A great player in Kemba Walker, but that is a contract that's going to severely hamper his ability to build a championship team. If you watch his team play, I think some of the body movement from the players is a little concerning. I think that when you look at the way they have been talking about him, talking about this team, talking about the pressure on this team to succeed right now, I don't think it's the same as what it once was. And again, you mentioned Bloomington and him having been through this ringer with Indiana before. He has his ties there, but the job at UNC and being in Chapel Hill from a resources, quality of life standpoint, even a tradition and a history standpoint, in every way, to me, is a better job than the Indiana job. So, I would not say that Brad Stevens is among the favorites, but I certainly know that that is a name that has come up. It's a name that's been discussed. Where his interest level is, I think that's something that is going to be really close to the vest, but I certainly know that there was interest at least in exploring, is this something he would be interested in? And again, with a guy like this at his age, someone who has been on the forefront of athletics in the past, you can understand why potentially that would be an attractive replacement.
All right, last for me, and Pac may have one too. The two most successful college head coaches with Carolina ties right now who are actually on benches are Wes Miller at UNC Greensboro and King Rice at Monmouth, who, by the way, is the 3-time Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference Coach of the Year. Are they in the mix?
Absolutely. 100%. 100% they're in the mix, and I would say that they are heavily in the mix, actually. And I think that this is what I was talking about a little bit earlier. If you have a hire that you're announcing this week, are you potentially going to be able to announce some of these, you know, again, multiple people can't get this job, right? only one person's going to win out. All these other people, does UNC want them to come in some fashion and be a part of the program? Does the new head coach want them to come in and be a part of that in some fashion? I think a guy like King Rice is someone who would make for an excellent addition to the bench. You know, Wes Miller, potentially. But again, he's you know, I think very quickly establishing himself as one of the hotter young coaches in the country. But certainly those two are both in contention. I would say that Wes Miller is probably a more serious candidate for the head coaching position right now than King Rice is. But again, anyone who had ties to the Carolina basketball family, anyone who had ties to Roy Williams, to Dean Smith, they were going to have a say in this process strictly from an input standpoint. But the fact that they're also being able to be in it from an interview standpoint, I think should tell you all that you need to know about the potential for what Bubba Cunningham is prioritizing right now, and really what the behind the scenes of UNC, what the messaging is in terms of, we do want to keep this in the family, maybe a little bit more than a couple of people had previously expressed.
The only thing I'd like to add, I'm not sure it's even a question, is that if North Carolina stays in-house and has the family member, we already know who all the potentials are there. We know who they are. If it's outside the family, I said this last week, if I was running the show, there's three people I'd contact. I want all three of them to tell me thanks, but no thanks, and I'll move on. But Few's one of them, right? Stevens is one of them. Jay Wright is one of them. We've already talked about Brad Stevens and Mark Few. Is there anybody else out of the family, Brendan, that you've heard that could be added to the mix that is not Jay Wright or Brad Stevens or Mark Few?
I think outside of those three, I haven't heard anyone that I would consider to be a serious candidate. I think a couple of people had... Right. I had seen speculation about someone like a Billy Donovan, perhaps. Obviously, he had tremendous success at the college level, but he just took this new job in the NBA. I don't take him as someone who is something of a quote-unquote job hopper. I'm not sure even what his level of interest would be. They just went out and made some massive trades at the deadline, so you know he's well-positioned. And another name that I had heard early on in the process that I don't think is eventually going to happen, but is certainly someone to mention, not for the UNC job, but going down the line for other head coaching jobs at the Division I men's level, is Dawn Staley, the head coach at the University of South Carolina. I think that when you are talking about someone with her pedigree as a coach, her pedigree as a player, she's a championship builder, clearly. She's sent multiple players to the WNBA, multiple MVPs. I mean, this is someone who is as bright a star in college women's coaching as there is. I think that if she wants it, eventually there will be a job for her at the high major Division I men's level. Not sure it's going to ultimately be the UNC job, but certainly I think that that is a proposition that is more readily on the horizon than some people might expect it to be.
Brendan Marks has once again delivered Pack a couple different things here. One, inside an analysis on Carolina's basketball move, but he also threw a little NBA at you that filled your cup up, Pack. You don't have any more NBA questions because Marks gave you all the NBA you could take right there in about two paragraphs.
And that would be true. The only thing missing in this entire interview was a display of the Aussie pup who's running around somewhere ragged right now. That's the only thing missing in this interview was a debut of the Aussie pup. That's it.
If you guys listen closely, you can probably hear her barking in the back as she does about 23 and a half hours out of every single day. But I'll make sure I get her in. I'll take up the whole screen. I'll get her in next time.
I love it. I love it.
Look, like all I'm going to tell you is that's a way to endear yourself to your neighbors is to have a dog that barks 23 and a half hours a day, my man.
Absolutely. I'm their best friend. They certainly love to see every time I take her to go to day camp. They love that.
Love that.
Yeah,
that's
it. Yeah. Brendan, thank you. Good luck this week. You'll be busy. We'll check in.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet. Don't forget, our tribute to Roy Williams starts at 1 o'clock this afternoon here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. We'll look back at the amazing career of the young man from Spruce Pine. 12 hours of games and unforgettable moments. Last home win, March the 6th at Duke. 90-83 win over Duke, March 4, 2017, with Michael Jordan in the seats. How about the buzzer-beating win in the 2011 ACC Tournament quarterfinals, the 83-76 win against Duke on March of 2006, and all six episodes of All Access with Carolina Basketball from a year ago. That starts today. 1 o'clock right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, we touched on the transfer portal with Brendan. The numbers are amazing. The percentages are just, you won't believe. And guess what? We're still relatively early in the portal, but it's hitting everybody, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. Hey, Monday. Good weekend, too. 844-SAY-ACCN. All right, Brendan Marks, I thought, was very insightful, as he always is, on the show. And the transfer portal is something that you better get. You may not like it as a fan. You may think it's goofy. And as I told you guys the other day, I'm assuming everybody's leaving. Let's just do that. It's a lot easier to follow it that way. And in October, you hand me a roster and let me know who's on your team. But, Wes, it's crazy. I mean, it's almost goofy to the point of absurdity. It's what it is.
It's bananas is what it is. All right, New York Post over the weekend used a website called verbalcommits.com to project the transfer portal, okay? Just to give you an idea where the portal was over the weekend. Now, this is men's basketball, okay? Roughly 1,200 players were in the portal. Now, Pac, that's 400 more than all of last year already, okay? Take that. Then you figure that there are only 357 Division I teams with 13 scholarships, okay? That means that roughly, according to the New York Post, almost 26% of players in Division I college basketball are considering leaving their programs. 26%. What are we doing?
Well, the first thing is that group there, verbalcommitments.com, needs to change their name or their title to imgone.com. That'd be a lot easier to follow. imgone.com. And, you know, at some point in time, listen, I'm all for the student athlete having as much power and control, name, image, and likeness and all this stuff. But this was not what it was designed for. I'm sorry. When everybody's just gotten up and walked out the door, and that's why I kidded around a couple of weeks ago about, let's just assume everybody's gone. Poof, you're gone. I mean, what are we doing?
Right.
Seriously, this is not what the intent was should have been, and that is that everybody is getting up and out, getting out of here. I mean, really becomes, it's gotten to the point now that when somebody announces that they're staying, it's almost like, wow, did you hear that Joe Smith is staying at school X? I mean, that is how crazy the landscape is right now in college hoops. And it goes back to, if you're going to make a coaching change, whether you're, you know, North Carolina situation, what Joe Castiglione did at Oklahoma, and he got to Porter Moser over the weekend. I mean, when you go through one of those transitions, it doubly puts the pressure on every athletic director in America to make sure that, number one, you get the right person and your timing is right, that he and or she figures out how this works, because your roster is disintegrated. And now you got to go back and basically re-recruit who's on your staff, on your roster, and then find out who's out there that fills holes where you say, listen, I could use a shooting guard or a power forward, or are there any centers out there? I mean, this is really, really crazy, the world we're living in right now in college athletics.
What, and Mark, we're looking at almost three dozen ACC players on this list. You know, you got some schools, you and I remarked about this last week, we've got some schools that have five or more players in the portal in the ACC. And you hit this on the head. Let's just assume everybody's in the portal and you hand us a roster in October, right? Give us a roster in October. Let us know who's on your team. Because between declarations of transfer portal, I'm going into the draft with or without an agent, I mean, whatever, this has reached now a point where the most ardent fan probably has to have a piece of paper and an ink pen handy to scratch off who's in the portal, who might be coming in, whatever the situation is. I mean, it's reached kind of that point, and I can't remember if it was Jeff Goodman or Borzello earlier in the season who talked to us about pending free agency in college basketball, but that's what this has become. You can jump in the portal and become a basketball free agent, essentially. It's crazy.
Well, here's absolutely the other thing. Crazy. Here's the other thing that we really haven't talked about. While this is incredibly difficult for the staff, the head coach and the staff to keep all this straight, how about being a fan, Wes?
Yeah.
Your loyalty to a school, and then listen, you're going to want your teammate, that's my guys, I'm an alum, I'm a fan, whatever the case. How in the world does a college basketball fan sit here now and go, well, I've got to be really excited about this? I don't care how many banners you got hanging up there, or if you're the Fab Five or nothing. It doesn't matter to me. But how can you handle that as a fan and go, how do I get excited about what's going on when I have no idea who's on my team, much less my coach figuring it out? I mean, we haven't even talked about the fans' perspective with all this stuff, because it does have a trickle-down effect, not only to the players and the coaches and administrators, but the guy that's writing a check for season tickets or watching this show or listening to us on SiriusXM. Hey, they want to be involved. They want to have that connection with that team. And if you're telling me every year, hey, we rip up our roster, we start again, you're like, what are we doing? I mean, it makes it really convenient and easy for the fan to say, you know what, I can do the same thing. And that is not healthy for college athletics, in my opinion.
Yep. We'll dive a little bit more into this coming up about 9 o'clock. When we come back, the 8 o'clock hour, Kevin Cargan, Notre Dame's lacrosse coach, Danny Busboom Kelly, Louisville's volleyball coach, and the best and worst of the weekend on Monday's Packer and Durham on the Atlantic Coast Conference television.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.